The Chamber of Commerce, business event after hours, tried and true. You'll always net a few contacts and renew old friendships. They're also a great place to try out your brand new and compelling 30-second personal commercial. Here's a note. Often at business networking events, everyone's trying to sell. You got to be able to wear either the buyer hat or the seller hat and listen for your opportunity. Number two, high-level Chamber of Commerce events, board of directors, board of advisors, all the annual dinner meetings. The Chamber of Commerce is your best local networking resource if you take advantage of it. Number three, any business journal event, 40 under 40, power breakfast, seminars, places where movers and shakers go. The business journal in your area has the attendee demographics that are staggering. They're all the people who make things happen. Number four, a networking club or a business organization where solid business contacts belong and participate. Where I live in Charlotte, it's the Metrolina Entrepreneurial Council or the Hood Harget Breakfast Club and the Metrolina Business Council. The more you attend, the more you get known, grow, and succeed in your marketplace. Number five, some place where like-minded people belong. The Touchdown Club, your college alumni club, the ACT Users Group. Having common ground always gets a conversation going. Number six, any kind of class that you take to learn more and make yourself better. Toastmasters, Dale Carnegie, even learning a foreign language. Other people who want to improve will also be there. You'll improve and make lifetime friendships at the same time. Number seven, a civic organization. Rotary, Kiwanis, Elks, Moose, Lions. Any civic animal will do. Meetings are a great place to build relationships with others and help the community at the same time. Let me give you a success hint. Be a leader, not just a member. Number eight, attend a cultural event. The theater and the symphony attract people with class and money. Take in a show and meet them. Number nine, get involved with a charity or be a community volunteer. Everything from the American Cancer Society to the Symphony Society have people who help behind the scenes. Be one of them. Number 10, your trade or professional association. This is the best place to learn about your product and your competition and your customers at the same time. Number 11, your best customer's trade or professional association. This is a great place to learn more about your customers and get introduced to your brand new prospects. Here's a success hint. Be a seminar presenter, not just an attendee. Number 12, trade shows. Both industry-specific and general business shows are excellent places to get known, get sales, and get ahead. Take the success hint from the stuff that I've just told you and add the ingredient of hard work rather than partying when you go to these trade shows and annual events, and you have the formula for trade show success. It may be your best networking venue of them all. And most people waste it on having a nonstop whoop it up or away from home attitude. Number 13, join a private club, a golf club, a country club, a food and networking club like Club Corp, with branches all over the United States, or a small private club. In Charlotte, it's Belly Acres, America's premier private club. Great food, great atmosphere, fascinating memorabilia on the wall, great service, always with a smile and some humor. Great owner, Bud mingles with his dry wit and fun to be there. Oh, and great networking. Every Charlotte bigwig eventually eats at Belly Acres. Number 14, meal networking. Invite a prospect to dine with you. Then invite a prospect for him or her. That's real networking. While you're in the restaurant, see who else you know. Hop around without being rude. Introduce everyone you meet to whomever you brought. Make it ultra-friendly. Compliment everybody in your introduction. Here's a personal note. I have my morning breakfast at Einstein Bagels. I love the food and the service. I have all my morning meetings there. I always meet other people there. My breakfast meeting is always a deal doer. And often, my chance meetings result in business. Here's a success hint. Own a restaurant or three. Places, now you don't have to own them. Places that you frequent and know the owner or the manager. Plays a major role in your meal networking. Number 15, health club. Hey, looks like you could use one. Exercise and network. Get healthy and wealthy at the same time. In Charlotte, it's the Y. Join the In Club and get in shape to win. Number 16, sporting events. Both games and tailgates, everybody eventually goes to the ball game. And for the competitive sports nut within you, play the networking game. It's in my book, The Sales Bible. Go buy it, read it. Number 17, parents of your children's friends. If you have a big prospect whose kid plays ball in the same league as your kid, you got a big advantage to make him or her a huge customer. Number 18, happy hour. It can be a great place to make a quick connection, just don't get too happy. Number 19, karaoke. Not only do you have a blast and meet people, you also improve your presentation skills every time you sing a song. Number 20, neighborhood homeowners associations and condo associations. Get to know your neighbors and who they know. Number 21, the airplane. I don't mean you need to meet every passenger, but get to know your seatmate. You never know who they know until you ask. I always try to sell a book to the person next to me. It's fun, it's practice, and it's profitable. Number 21.5, be ready to network when you get there. Woody Allen says 90% of success is showing up, and he's almost right. 90% of success is showing up prepared. Have your personal commercial, cocktail commercial, one-minute hook ready to spin at a moment's notice is evidence of your networking prowess or not. I've given you the meat. Here's your personal action plan. List the possible areas, every one where you can network and win. Figure out who goes there now and who may be there when you get there. Figure out what business enticement you have and start there. Here's the secret. Get respected by those who count by earning it. Don't just attend. Get involved. Lead. Here's a big secret. The key advantage is that networking is relaxed. It's business leisure. The workday's busy, business frantic. You get more done and see more people in the leisure zone. But here's the biggest secret. Be aware of who is around you wherever they are. The danger, however, is not paying attention to the person you're talking to when you're networking. Another word for that would be rude. But the moment you're free, your peripheral vision must be 360 degrees. The more you pay attention, the more it will pay. It's also important to note that the best places to networking are not just my ideas and suggestions. Every one of them that I've talked to you about is something that I do personally and have had major success with. These are things I do, not just things I teach. So, make contacts, make sales, eliminate cold calling, build your career, build relationships, build your reputation, and make friends. That's networking. I've met my lifelong best friends networking, and I also do business with them, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth. How many lifelong friends do you make cold calling? Hey, you want a free Red Bit? You want Harvey McKay's 10 Rules of Networking? Well, I've been given permission by Harvey to excerpt a page from the best networking book ever, Harvey McKay's Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. Go to Gittimer.com, register if you're a first-time user, and enter three words, Dig Your Well, in the Red Bit box. And I have a challenge for you. Between now and next week, attend three networking functions from the list I've just given you. I guarantee you'll make more contacts, build more relationships, maybe even make a sale or two. Here's one more secret. To make the most of a networking event, spend 75% of your time with people that you don't know. Red Bite. Get face-to-face first. Meeting somebody on the phone, cold calling them, even from a referral, is not the best way to start a relationship. Oh, it can work. I'm just saying it's not the best way. When you meet someone face-to-face, you can see them and hear them at the same time. This is 100 times more insightful. Networking is the best way to create initial face-to-face meetings. It doesn't just have to be a business after hours kind of thing. It can also be a three-way lunch or a trade association meeting, even an annual convention. The reason face-to-face is so powerful is that your prospect can get to like you faster. The more they like you, the more they will buy from you. Networking builds rapport that leads to appointments and sales. lots of sales. Red Bite. Networking eliminates cold calling. I've told you 1,000 times before, I consider cold calling a waste of time. Either by phone or knocking on doors, you're interrupting somebody by trying to barge in and sell something. Oh, it works, but not very often. And cold calling, or should I say lack of ability to cold call, is the single biggest cause of job turnover. Consider for a moment your annual convention or trade show. 100 exhibitors, maybe more, with decision makers all over the place. People you couldn't get to see within a year of cold calling, all in the same room at the same time. What could you be thinking? What could you be wishing for? If you meet them first and they like you, you'll have an easier time getting your phone call through and making a meeting. But think of it in reverse. Suppose you cold called somebody and then saw them at the trade show. What would you say to that guy?
Hey, remember me? I'm the guy that cold called you and you hung up.
Red Bite. Networking leads to referrals. Not every networking contact is a direct prospect for your business. Through an advanced networking technique called net weaving, created by my friend Bob Littell in Atlanta, Georgia, www.netweaving.com, you can help other people find resources at a networking event. When you do this, you'll find that other people will help you. In addition, you can go to a networking event where your customers go, and they may just introduce you to other people like themselves who may also be willing to buy from you. Networking works well when you employ the two-word secret, show up. Networking works best when you employ the three-word secret, show up prepared. Principle 6. If you can't get in front of the real decision maker, you suck. In this principle, we're going to talk about the reasons you can't get appointments. Will the real decision maker please stand up? And the red bites, which will include can't get past the gatekeeper, you suck. Can't get your voicemail returned, you suck. Are you getting the message yet? The reasons you can't get appointments. The guy wouldn't appoint me.
I can't get through to the decision maker. You won't commit to an appointment. She won't return my call. He's rescheduled me 3 times in 2 weeks. He didn't show up for his appointment.
Quit your whining. Those aren't real reasons. Those are symptoms or wake-up calls to the fact that your fundamental sales skills are lacking. Why are you not setting appointments? Easy answer. No compelling reason on the part of the prospective buyer to do so. Hard answer. You couldn't sell them on yes. They sold you on no. And the appointment is the fulcrum point of the sale. You can't sell squat without a face-to-face or phone-to-phone appointment with a decision maker. Note well. This looks great. Let me share this with my boss. Is a statement that signals you've just wasted your time and, in my opinion, is not an appointment. That's visiting. An appointment is when you meet with somebody to further the sales process or you meet with someone who can actually decide. What do you have to do to change or what do you have to change in order to achieve or exceed your sales appointment objectives? Create some compelling reasons beyond the feeble ones that you're now using. Saving money, 5 minutes of your time, I'll be in your neighborhood tomorrow, I'd like to gather some information and other puke. And stop blaming other people for your lack of sales skills. Now, some of you make appointments and sell over the phone. Some make appointments and go outside to sell. Some make appointments at events. And all of you think, my way is different, Jeffrey. And you're all wrong. All appointment setting is the same. Engage a qualified decider and get them to commit to your presentation. Don't sell the product. Don't sell the service. Sell the appointment. No one can push a contract or a check through the phone. Just sell the appointment. How do you get an appointment? Oh, simple. You ask. Well, not quite. You engage. You spark. You provide value. You interest. You create desire. If you call and the person is willing and you set the appointment, that's pretty much dumb luck. My 8-year-old granddaughter, Morgan, can mail out information and set an appointment with somebody who's willing. This information is about people who perceive that they are not willing yet. So here's the major clue. If they have no interest, you will not get the appointment. If you provide no perceived value, they will not appoint you. If you're not engaging, they will not appoint you. If they perceive that they have no need, they will not appoint you. You need to build your expertise beyond your brochure and your price list. So my first clue is, instead of studying television at night, you need to become an expert in the industry or the categories that you cover. You need to know where your prospect or your customer uses your product or service, where they value, where they profit from, in order to build their business and make more profit. As a result, you may need to become an expert in branding, customer loyalty, use of media, customer response, delayed response, publicity, public relations, converting responses to sales, image building, and every element that the customer is seeking as he or she plans their sales campaign or their business. None of this appears in your literature or theirs. If you want to know the effectiveness of your current brochure, grab a red Sharpie and circle all the areas that your customer or your prospect would consider valuable or savable. You may not take the cap off the pen. The first thing you got to do before you ever get to an appointment is get the attention and the interest of the decision maker. You do this by engaging him or her, and you engage with questions or statements that lead to their wanting to know more. Not necessarily more about you, rather wanting to know more about what you know that could help them. You have to know something about them. You have to be brief. You can't sell more than an appointment. Don't ask, how are you today, or have you ever heard of us? You engage. The heart of the appointment, or the heart of the appointment process, is the engagement. Ask compelling, engaging questions. When I sold lists of new corporations and homeowners, I would walk into a potential customer and say, who's in charge of sales leads? That question, that one question, got me an appointment more than 50% of the time. If you sell copiers, or you're a printer, you walk in and you say, who's in charge of image? Or if you're an accountant or a banker, you walk in and say, who's in charge of profit? You ask the prospect what they think and tell the prospect how he or she wins or could win by meeting with you. Do not save the prospect money. Earn the prospect profit. Ask for a short term with an option to make it longer if they're interested. Start higher on the decision-making chain, higher than you dare. If you're thinking, should I go to the accounting department or the office manager? Go to neither one. Go to the CEO. Talk profit and productivity, not saving money. Talk ideas and opportunities, not a chance to tell what you do. They want friendly, help, answers, productivity, and profit. That's not a benefit statement. That's a profitability statement. That's not a benefit statement. That's a productivity statement. They do not want to, they do not need to be educated. They want answers, just like you do. They do not want solutions. They want answers. They do not want to take their time to hear about you. If they give you time, it better be about them. Which do you think the prospect wants? Answers to their problems or your sales pitch? Offer answers as a reason to meet, and presto, the appointment is yours. Let me give you more information. It's a free red bit. If you want a lesson in persistence, go to Gittimer.com, register if you're a first-time user, and enter the word persistence in the red bit box. Will the real decision maker please stand up? The prospect tells you, I only need one more approval and the order is yours. For joy, the order is mine. Don't celebrate too soon there, Sparky. The one last person needed to approve is the real decision maker, the boss, the guy you were supposed to be talking to in the first place, the one person who can say no and there's no possibility of reversing it. Rut-row. Throw some water on yourself, pal. This sale hangs by a thread, and what are you going to do about it? Going home and bragging, it's in the bag, or saying over and over, hope I get it, hope I get it. Well, neither one of those is going to work. Here's what to do. The words, I only need one more approval and the order is yours, must trigger your response to the prospect by saying, great, when do we all meet? Get the prospect to agree to let you attend the final decision meeting. If you're not present when the last decision is made, the odds are you will lose the final battle of the sales war without being able to fire one bullet. Try this in a non-salesy and friendly way. Say to the prospect, look, I'm an expert at what I do, and you're an expert at what you do. Surely, you're going to discuss our service, and questions about productivity and profitability are going to come up. I'm certain that you'll agree that the right information has to be presented so that the most intelligent decision and the best decision for your business can be made. True? And get the commitment. And questions might come up about our service, and I would love to be there to answer those questions about my expertise so you can make the decision that's in the best interest of your business. If this fails, try adding the phrase, please, I'll be your best friend. If the prospect or the customer agrees to a meeting, he or she at that point considers you a resource, a partner, not just a vendor. They trust you. If they don't agree to let you in the meeting, you're just a salesperson. When others need to final approve the deal, besides learning to qualify the buyer better, you better take these five action steps or the sale is in jeopardy. Number one, get the prospect's personal approval. Mr. Prospect, if it was just you and you didn't need to confer with anybody else, would you buy it? Now, the prospect is almost always going to say yes, but that you have to qualify that one step further. Then ask, does this mean that you'll recommend our service to others? Get the prospect to endorse you and your service or your product to the others, but don't let him or her make the pitch for you. Number two, get on the prospect's team. Begin to talk in terms of we, us, and the team. By getting on the prospect's team, you can get the prospect on your side of the sale. Number three, arrange a meeting with all the decision makers. Do it any ethical way that you have to. Number four, know the prime decider in advance. Ask your customer, the person you're talking to, tell me a little bit about the other people and write down every characteristic. Try to get the personality traits of the other deciders. Try to find out some personal information. Number five, make your entire presentation again when you get in front of these people. You only have to do this, by the way, if you want to make the sale. Otherwise, just leave it to the person you're talking to. He thinks he can handle it on his own and will try his best to convince you of that. If you think you can get around these five steps, think again. It's obvious you're looking for shortcuts, or you would have properly qualified the buyer in the first place. If you make the mistake of letting your prospect become a salesperson on your behalf, goes to the boss of the group instead of you, you will lose almost every time. So let me give you 2.5 ounces of prevention for next time. Number one, qualify the decision maker as the only by asking a seemingly innocent question at the beginning of the presentation. Is there anybody else that you work with or confer with or bounce things off of on decisions like this? The object is to find out if anybody else is involved in the decision before you make the presentation. Number two, prevent the situation from occurring by saying in your initial presentation, look, if you're interested in our stuff, when we're finished, would it be possible to meet the CEO and talk about it for just a couple minutes? And number 2.5. The most powerful qualifying question you can ask, and it must be asked exactly this way, is, Bill, how will this decision be made? And Bill will give you an answer. Well, we sit around and we pick the best of it. And you follow that up with this question, then what? And Bill will begin to give you the saga about how the decision is really made. And then you ask, then what? You ask then what four or five times, and presto, you'll have the name of the real decision maker. The number of sales you will make will be in direct proportion to the number of actual decision makers that you can sit in front of. The problem with most salespeople, not you of course, is that they're sitting in front of someone who has to ask their mommy or their daddy if they can buy from you or not. Real salespeople sit in front of real decision makers. How real are you? Let me give you a free red bit. If you want to have a few reasons why people don't decide, it's going to give you a bit better of an insight as to their decision-making process. Go to Gittimer.com, register if you're a first-time user, and enter the word decide in the red bit box. Decision maker won't appoint you or give you an appointment? Come on, man. You suck. And all these years, you've been blaming it on somebody else. Red Bite. Can't get past the gatekeeper? You suck. It never ceases to amaze me how many salespeople will whine to me that they couldn't get past the gatekeeper. How many times do you have to get hit over the head with a hammer before you finally decide this isn't working? If you can't get past the gatekeeper, why don't you just simply create a different approach? My recommendation is don't go to the gatekeeper. Stand out in the parking lot and ask anybody besides the gatekeeper and they'll help you. But there's a secret to getting past the gatekeeper every time. And I'm going to share it with you so that you can use it forever. Equip the gatekeeper and ask for somebody in sales. No qualifying. A salesperson will appear in under 3 minutes, ready to tell you everything about everyone. Sales! That's the job of salespeople, to tell other people things. They'll lead you right to the CEO, and as you're walking down the hallway, they're going to tell you what kind of car he drives, where college he went to, the name of his kids, his favorite sports teams, his golf handicap, everything. The salesperson will reveal all the secrets of the company and will do so gladly. That's the secret. Ask for someone in sales and then make any request you have of him or her. Red Bite. Can't get your voicemail returned? You suck. Everybody has a voicemail strategy and very few of them work. One of the reasons is that voicemail screens out unwanted calls and unwanted people, and you may be among the unwanted. Certainly you're among the unknown. In the sales Bible, there's a strategy of leave half of a message, pretend like you're cut off, and hang up. So go get the sales Bible. In my seminars, I tell people to have their kid leave a message when somebody persistently will not return their call. If you use a kid message, it will be returned in 20 minutes, guaranteed. But the object of voicemail is to use it to convey some kind of valuable reason to get your call returned, or it will not get returned. That's not a difficult concept to understand. If you give someone a proposal and you leave a voicemail saying, I hope you got my proposal. If you have any questions, please call me. That voicemail is never going to get returned because it's stupid. You know it's stupid. I know it's stupid. And the customer knows it's stupid. The secret to voicemail is to be slightly daring. Take a risk. If you're humorous and creative, you have a shot at it. If you're not, you don't. Principle 7. Engage me, and you can make me convince myself. Ask the wrong questions, get the wrong answers. Ask smart questions, and they think you're smart. That's what's going to be in this principle. There's also red bites, asking powerful questions that will make prospects think in new ways. What you ask sets the tone and the perception of the buyer. What you ask determines their response. What you ask makes or breaks the sale. And your questions are the critical factor in the way your customers perceive you. Here we go. Ask the wrong questions, get the wrong answers. The most important aspect of making a sale is also a major weakness of every salesperson, asking questions. It's an enigma to me. Questions are so critical, you'd think it would be the topic of training every week. Yet, salespeople are odds-on favorites to have never taken one training program in the science of asking a question. How critical? The first personal rapport question sets the tone for the meeting, and the first business question sets the tone for the sale. That's critical. Benefits of asking the right question? Good question. Let me give you the 9.5 benefits to make sales buy. Great questions qualify the buyer, establish rapport, create prospect disparity, eliminate or differentiate you from the competition, build credibility, know the customer and their business, identify needs, find their hot buttons, get personal information, and 9.5, they close the sale. All of these answers come from asking the right questions, power questions. Here's the rub. Do you have 25 of them? The most powerful questions you can create at your fingertips? No? Well, join the crowd. 95% of all salespeople don't. That could be why only 5% of salespeople rise to the top. Just a theory, or is it? Here's the challenge. Get every prospect and customer to say, "Nobody ever asked me that before." Here are the 7.5 questioning success strategies. Number one, ask prospect questions that make him or her evaluate new information. Two, ask questions that qualify needs. Three, ask questions about improved productivity, profits, or savings. Four, ask questions about company or personal goals. Five, ask questions that separate you from the competition, not compare you to them. And number six, ask questions that make the customer or prospect think before giving a response. Seven, ask power questions to create a buying atmosphere, not a selling one. And 7.5, a critical success strategy. To enhance your own listening skills, write down the answers. It proves you care, it preserves your data for follow-up, keeps the record straight, and makes the customer feel important. How do you formulate a power question? Here's the secret. There's a secret to creating and asking the right type of power question. A question that makes the other person stop and think, consider new information, and respond in terms of you. Sound complicated? Well, it's not. Let me give you some examples. What type of life insurance do you have? Do you have a pager? Who are you currently using for long-distance service? All of those questions stink. Let me give you some good examples. If your husband died, how would the house payments be made? How would your kids go to college? If your most important customer called right now, how would you get the message? If your long-distance charges were 30% higher than they should be, how would you know? All of those questions make the buyer think, respond in terms of his own interest, and answer in terms of you. Wow. Let me give you a winner. A guy at Time Warner Cable in Raleigh came up with a grand slam home run question in a training session. The objective that I set was to ask the prospect qualifying questions about getting cable TV and sell all the premium channels possible. So this guy screams out from the back of the room, "If you owned your own cable channel, Mrs. Jones, what would be on it?" Wow, what a question. It draws out all the likes and maybe the dislikes of the customer and puts every answer in terms of the sale being made. Let me give you a series of questions. Let's say I train sales teams. Hey, what a coincidence. That's what I do. Let me give you a series of questions designed to make my prospect think about himself and answer in terms of me. The answers are not given here, and I can sometimes play the part of in question order, but you'll get the process. How many of your salespeople did not meet their sales goals last year? What was the major cause of that? What plans have you made to ensure that they will be met this year? What type of personal development plan for each salesperson have you put in place? How do you support your sales staff? How much training did you budget last year? How much did you wish you would have budgeted? When the training takes place, how do you measure each individual's professional development progress? Now, these 8 questions will give me enough answers to rewrite their sales record book and their checkbook. It's not just asking questions, it's asking the right questions. A sale is made or lost based on the questions you ask. If you aren't making all the sales you want, start by evaluating the specific wording of the questions that you're asking. Your answers are in your questions. Questions unlock sales. Any questions? Well, if you're looking for a few power question lead-ins, try these. What do you look for? What have you found? How do you propose? What's been your experience? How have you successfully used? How do you determine? Why is that the deciding factor? What makes you choose? What did you like about? What's one thing you would improve about? What would you change about? Do not say, "What did you not like about?" Here are some other factors. What does your competitor do about? How do your customers react to? To use questions successfully, they got to be thought out and written down in advance. My challenge to you is develop a list of 15 to 25 questions that uncover needs, problems, pains, concerns, and objections. develop 15 to 25 more that create prospect commitment as a result of the information that you've uncovered. Practice. After about 30 days of asking the right questions, you'll begin to see the real rewards. Ask smart questions, they think you're smart. Ask dumb questions. Let me give you a sales truth. Salespeople become known by the questions they ask. Now, knowing this truth, you'd think all salespeople would ask smart questions. You'd be thinking wrong. Never ceases to amaze me that with all the options salespeople have, they choose to alienate anger or cause doubt in the mind of the prospect by setting the wrong tone with their questions. Here are the dumbest questions salespeople ask and why they're dumb. Who are you currently using? Pre-call research will tell you that. And maybe the prospect feels that it's none of your business. Good start. Are you satisfied with your present supply? Everybody's going to tell you that they're satisfied. So what? Well, okay, if you're satisfied, I'll just leave and quit. Here's another dumb one. How much are you currently paying? None of your business, number two. Let's get down to price as fast as you can. Come on. Can I quote you on? Why send a quote? The person who quotes 2 cents cheaper gets the business. What about the value? Here's another dumb one. Can I bid on? Same as quote, only worse. This is 100% price driven. Low margin, low profit, low commission, low percentage of success. How low do you want to go? Here's another dumb one. Tell me a little bit about your business. No, it's a waste of the prospect's time. Find out a little bit about the prospect's business so you can go into the sales call with answers and ideas that might get the prospect excited enough to buy. How about this? Are you the person who decides? Come on. This is the question that breeds the most lies. The answer is most often yes, and the answer is most often false. Why ask a question that breeds misleading information? The correct question to ask is, how will the decision be made? Here's another dumb one. If I could save you some money, come on, man. Every salesperson thinks the customer will jump at the hint of saving money. This tactic actually has a negative effect on the buyer and makes the salesperson work twice as hard to prove himself or herself, and usually at a lower price and a lower commission. And the worst question of them all? Oh, it's one you ask all the time. What would it take to get your business? This question is literally saying to the prospect, look, pal, I don't have much time here. Could you just tell me the quickest way to get this order and make me do the least amount of work possible so that I can get out of here? Let's talk about some dumb words. Let's add a bunch of negative words that prospects hate or gets their guard up. Today, frankly, honestly, if I were you, or anything negative about the previous choice that they made, or anything negative about your competition. Now, before you get all hostile on me, I'm not saying don't get this information. I am saying there are smarter, better ways of getting this information that will lead you to a sale. The questions that I just talked to you about make the prospect have a lower opinion of you, and that will lead to nothing but price wars and frustration. These are all price-driven questions. In other words, they're the kind of questions where the sale boils down to price. And if you want the sale real bad, simple, just lower your price to where you make little or no profit. Hello? The secret of good, smart questions are those that make the prospect stop and think, consider new information, and answer in terms of you. If you ask people questions that you could have found out the answer to by some simple means as looking up the information on their website, how intelligent or hardworking does that make you look? Answer, not very. Here's a note. You do have the luxury of asking a weak question about their stuff if you preface it with the statement, I was looking at your website last night. I got a couple of ideas that I'd like to talk to you about, but there were a few things that I'd like to understand a little bit better about the way you serve your customer. Now you can ask anything you want and still look smart. If you walk in with an idea that you got from reading their annual report, their trade magazine, or reading their web information, you're going to earn the respect of the person making the buying decision. You will also be viewed as credible. Respect and credibility lead to trust. Trust leads to the sale. Think about that the next time you're formulating a question. The sale is yours for the asking. All you got to do is ask for it the right way. There's a free red bit attached to this piece. If you want a few real smart questions, since everybody starts their sales different, I'm going to give you the lead-ins to those questions, and you adapt it to whatever you sell. Is that fair enough? Go to Gittimer.com, register if you're a first-time user, and enter the words smart questions in the red bit box. Red Bite. Asking powerful questions will make prospects think in new ways. That's the bold part. You ask questions to get the prospects to give you information that will lead you closer to the sale. You want information that affected prospects in the past so that it will get you closer to the truth about their present experiences. You want to understand their motives for buying, and you want to find out what criteria they used in selecting you or anyone else in the past. To get prospects to think in new ways, you have to ask thought-provoking questions. Let me give you a good example. Mr. Jones, what would you do if you lost two of your top 10 customers? That question is followed with, well, what's your plan to keep them loyal? Now, those are questions that don't have a specific product or service behind them. They may not fit everybody's business, but let me tell you what, they're thought-provoking. Oh, you might want to ask the same questions of yourself. Red Bite. What you ask sets the tone and the perception of the buyer. When you begin a question with the phrase, what's been your experience with, prospects turn into wisdom providers instead of information providers. Instead of giving them your wisdom, buyers will like you a whole lot more when you ask for their wisdom. Unfortunately, salespeople think they have to educate buyers. Nothing could be further from the truth. Buyers don't want an education. Buyers want answers, just like you do. Your questions set the stage for the selling process, which is really the buying process. Your job is to set the buying tone by engaging the prospect intellectually and emotionally. Red Bite. What you ask determines their response. If you're looking to get into a battle about why your product is different from the competition's product or why your price is higher, just ask dumb questions about how the competition is treating the customer. If you ask a question about bidding or saving money, your answers are going to be in terms of price and what kind of deal can you give me. But if you ask value questions, questions about productivity and profit, you're going to get answers that lead you to the prospect's motive for buying. Red Bite. What you ask makes or breaks the sale. If you know that questions are critical, why are you spending more time watching TV reruns than you are at developing new questions? Note, I just asked you a value question. If you know that questions are critical, why don't you have a list of 25 questions that your competition is not asking? The more thought-provoking your questions, the more your prospective buyer will respect you. The higher that respect level is, the more likely they are to be truthful with you and give you insight into the key factors that will determine the sale. They will also begin to share the truth about how the decision is made. Every minute you're in front of prospects, they're deciding how much they like you, how much they believe you, how much they respect you, how much they have confidence in you, and how much they trust you. All of these factors determine whether or not they will buy from you. Red Bite. Your questions are a critical factor in the way your customers perceive you. If they're intelligent and engaging, they consider you a person of value. If your questions are dumb, they consider you a salesperson of price. It's not hard sell, it's heart sell. Good questions get to the heart of the problem, need, situation very quickly without the buyer feeling like he or she is being pushed. If you can make them laugh, you can make them buy. Having the first laugh makes a sale that lasts. Need to improve your humor? Become a student of humor. That's what this lesson is all about. Let me give you the Red Bites. Humor, the final frontier. Humor is the highest form of language mastery. What's so funny about being professional? The difference between a joke and a story, and laughter is universal. Let's start with Having the first laugh makes a sale that lasts. Hey, I got a new photo. It's about time. The other one was about 4 years old. I've lost a bit of hair since the last one. Okay, I've lost a lot of hair since the last one, but I couldn't tell. They only fell out one at a time. There's two ways of looking at my hair loss. Oh my gosh, I'm losing my hair. Woe is me. Or not much more to lose. I've tried to use my misfortune, if you want to look at it on the vain side, as an opportunity to poke fun at myself and make others laugh. For example, in a seminar I'll say, I'm not actually losing my hair, I'm a hair donor. I give my hair to people less fortunate than myself. And I'll point to somebody with lots of hair. And I'll add, the hair club for men refused to let me join. They said you had to have some hair to get in. Or I'll say, I wear great ties because I know no one's ever going to come up to me and say, Jeffrey, great hair. The hair thing's been beneficial financially. For example, I use very little shampoo and even less conditioner. It takes me very little time to comb my hair, giving me lots of time to work on other beauty areas. Last week, somebody asked me if I could describe myself so they could meet me at the plane. I said, I'm 6 feet tall, I weigh about 185 pounds, I have a beard, my hair is short, and some of it's missing. The customer howled with laughter. The other day in Dallas, I needed a haircut. I was at one of those snazzy hotels, and I figured, how expensive can it be? I went ahead and made the appointment without making a price. $50! They charged me $50. I asked the guy, what is it, a dollar a hair? Well, the humor thing seems destined to be in my presentation material because the hair thing definitely is not. What's your humor point? Do you have one? Let me give you a major clue. Making people smile or laugh puts them at ease and creates an atmosphere more conducive for agreement. If they agree with your humor, they're more likely to agree with purchasing your product or service. Pick something that's funny to you. Lack of hair used to bug me. Now it doesn't bug me as much. Now I look for ways to laugh about it because I can't change it. Pick something that's personal to you. If it's about you, it's comfortable to you. Develop lines that are tested to make people laugh. Nothing corny. Try out the lines on your friends or coworkers first. If they laugh, use them. If they groan, so will everybody else. Keep the lines clean, real clean. And be careful about ethnic or gender. My recommendation is don't. Poke fun at yourself first. It's okay if the finger points at you. It's not okay if you make fun at the expense of other people. And don't drag it out. Use it once or twice and move on. Take small humor risks. If the other guy is bald, I say, you know, the first thing I liked about you was your hair. He laughs, we grow a little bit closer because we have a plight in common. I believe that making people smile is a major key in selling. The prospect may not be interested in hearing about your stuff, but they're always looking to smile or laugh. You want some safe topics? Children, what they did or what they said. Traffic, what you did or saw. Repeating a sitcom or television line with acknowledgments to the source. Self stuff, hair, clothes, makeup, shoes. Self-abilities, golf, tennis, running, exercise. Self-improvement, frustrations in climbing the ladder or studying. Developing humor takes time. Like all other sales skills, it must be learned, and it's a science. And yes, some people are naturally funnier than others. But if you're not very funny, you can learn. The best way I found is pay attention to what happens to you. The other day I was in the shower in a hotel and I broke open a new bottle of hair shampoo. I used it and put the lid back on and remarked to myself, you know you don't have much hair when you use the shampoo and you can't tell any is missing. I laughed at myself. Do you? Humor not only helps make the sale, it also helps build the relationship. Laughter is mutual approval, and mutual approval is at the fulcrum point of selling. If you can make them laugh, you can make them buy.
But Jeffrey, I'm not a funny person.
My sense of humor is about zero. So here's what to do. Study humor. Let me give you a free red bit. If you want a list of things that you can do to become more humorous, go to GetHumor.com, register if you're a first-time user, and enter the word humor in the Git bit box. May the joke be with you. Need to improve your humor? Become a student of humor. Visit comedy clubs. Study the delivery and the timing of the comedians. Watch audience reaction. Observe what makes them laugh and what makes you laugh. Watch comedy shows on TV or cable. The older shows tend to be funnier. Make a note of what's funny. Bugs Bunny is funny. Actions, vocal tones, facial expressions, words, types of stories. Maybe read a joke book or books that are funny. Milton Berle's joke book is particularly good. Books written by humorists like Dave Barry or Art Buchwald or Scott Adams or Louis Grizzard are great. Maybe you should join Toastmasters. They have an advanced program in humorous speaking. Watch or listen to children very carefully. Kids are naturally funny in both words and actions. And read history. The truth is often stranger and funnier than fiction. My recommendation is that you take humor risks where you don't have much to lose. At home, with friends, in divorce court, prison. And take a professional comedian or a joke writer to lunch. You're going to learn the makeup of humor by spending time with professionals. Practice making funny faces and gestures in the mirror. If you're really brave, use the rear view mirror. Get out your high school yearbook. Talk about funny. Look up your picture or your girlfriend's. Take acting classes. This is a great way to come out of your shell. A friend of mine told me that I was acting like a jerk. I told him I wasn't acting. Carry audio tapes or CDs of your favorite comedians and use them in the car. Pop in a CD just before you make a sales call. Making a laugh will give you a lift. Start looking for humor in your everyday life. Try to appreciate it as it's happening instead of always in hindsight. Practice exaggerating your gestures and experimenting with your posture. A lot of humor is body language. Learn to be funny without saying a word. Maybe hang around more funny people. It's amazing how your humor will increase when you're in the company of people who are funny. My biggest suggestion is laugh a lot. If you're serious about using humor, start smiling and laughing more. Red Bite. Humor is the final frontier. It's easy to learn all about your product. It's easy to learn all about your customer. It's easy to learn the science of selling. It's hard to learn the science of humor, and harder to learn how to place that humor and time that humor into your sales presentation. The essence of humor is that it is relaxing and creates more open dialogue and atmosphere. An atmosphere that will begin to breed friendship, respect, and compatibility. The reason I refer to it as the final frontier is that it's the last element that you put into your selling process. Use humor when you're the master of knowing your product, knowing your customer and his business, and knowing the science of selling. If you only use humor and don't know the other three elements, then you'll be a clown who makes no sales. Humor will not get you by. Rather, it will solidify your relationship.